Hello and welcome to Radio Edge Talk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Andy Cunningham, who's Staff Tutor, Health and Wellbeing, and that's at Dundee City Council. Welcome to Edge Talk, Andy.
Hello.
Over the next 20 minutes or so, we are going to be looking at getting it right for pupils of parents with cancer, and this relates to some research that Andy conducted recently. But just to start off with, Andy, could you give us a kind of brief background to your career?
I'm staff tutor for health and wellbeing just now, which is a position with authority level. So I work across all the schools in Dundee, supporting all aspects of health and wellbeing, but I've got a particular focus on substance misuse and mental and emotional wellbeing. But that's a seconded position. Last year I was an acting deputy at Harris Academy in Dundee. And before that, I'd been a PT guidance and teacher of PE all at Harris Academy in Dundee.
And how did you come to get involved in this research project? You know, what's the start of your kind of so-called research journey? Why did you pick this particular area?
So this was my dissertation as part of my MEd in pupil care and support. And that started, I graduated with that last summer. And that started sort of the 3 years leading up to that. And it was just a case of our local authority offering funded places to complete just the first PGCE year with Dundee University. So I kind of put my name down for that. And then luckily was able to get sort of funding to carry on with that and complete the whole thing over the 3 years. So I'd found that very interesting. And to be honest, I'd kind of went for it with an eye on sort of going for promoted positions. I was just a classroom teacher at the time, but in the sort of interim period between getting the place and actually starting it, I'd got a PT position. But it was obviously very interesting and helpful to kind of carry on, and it's sort of influenced my career so far. In terms of the sort of topic, I suppose I've always kind of been interested in it. I've, like a lot of people, had sort of personal experience with cancer, and my mum had cancer when I was at school, and she got cancer again when I was a teacher, and like both times completely recovered and is absolutely fine now. But it was quite interesting for me, I think, to see from the sort of both angles, and like especially the second time, kind of reflect because I was in a school and teaching. It kind of made me think about how pupils and how many pupils are kind of going through that experience just now, and what's the best way that schools can support them. It really kind of interested, like cancer as an illness really sort of interested me in terms of people's reactions to it, because everyone's got a story that everyone's been affected by it, but there's something about it as an illness that, you know, there's a lot of sort of, it sounds bizarre, but there's a lot of good that comes from it as well, because there's such a strong community and such like strong survivorship with people, and I just sort of found that very interesting and thought, like, what could I do as a guidance teacher to sort of bring my experiences and other people's experiences together to try and best support the young people in the school.
It's fascinating stuff, and you know, good on you for going ahead with the research, Andy. How did you actually then, what became your research question? How did you go about formulating that? Because I know from experience, and I'm sure in the particular area that you're referring to, there would always be the danger of just going far too wide with the subject matter.
During my second year of my master's, my PGDE year, The second module was, you know, you were able to kind of pick a topic, and that's where I kind of started. And that piece of research, I was looking at like the pupils' perceptions of the support that they were getting in schools. So I was able to identify sort of half a dozen pupils in our school that were willing to take part and sort of get their, like through a sort of online survey, get their opinions on what it was like to be at school when your parent was ill, basically. And after the end of that, I thought, right, I wanted to take that a wee bit further and sort of widen the net a bit. And that's why I thought about getting guidance teachers' perceptions of their role when they're doing it. I think as well, because of that, what was also in my head was that I was in an experience where I'd had this sort of personal background with it, and any time that I was supporting a young person who was going through that, it kind of, me sharing my experiences with them at a sort of personal level just seemed to kind of help the situation. And I think I'd through some reading and stuff, I'd kind of read that there was a tentative link between people's personal experiences and their ability to support others. And I just kind of wanted to explore that a wee bit further. So it was, you're right in that it could go very wide. But the idea of just getting people's ideas and their perceptions of this quite specific topic and specific group of people, that the group of pupils, kind of managed to keep me on track a wee bit, I think.
So your actual research findings then, I think you kind of identified three main challenges. Pupil wellbeing, teacher wellbeing, and the kind of specific Scottish educational context.
Yeah. So I suppose the, in terms of the pupil wellbeing, it was seen as a challenge because of the nature of the illness. As I've kind of spoken about before, it's quite unique. It seems to have this kind of unique effect on young people, or on anyone really. And what I kind of did was, in terms of looking at literature, to begin with, I'd sort of used the Shinari indicators as a basis, because I was looking at what are the potential threats to wellbeing, or to young people's wellbeing. And what I found was the kind of main ones that came through were a child's ability to be healthy, a child's ability to achieve, and for them to feel included when their parent has cancer. In terms of like the healthy part, it was probably more leaning towards the mental and emotional health and wellbeing part. And that was largely down to their coping skills with their parent being ill. So, and this is where I found it quite interesting, and especially interesting when I looked at this literature in terms of my own experiences, because with cancer as an illness, there's a far more there's a much more prevalence of like internal emotion focused coping skills. So that means that the young person is far more likely to kind of hold on to their feelings, if you like, as opposed to sort of external problem focused coping skills, where there's more likely to be lashing out and maybe bad behaviour and that kind of thing. And it was found that the problem focused coping is much more prevalent in maybe other parental issues, whether it's like substance misuse or mental health issues or like family breakdowns, that kind of thing. So the threat to the well-being was that when young people have too much emotion-focused coping, there's more likely to be mental health issues in the future. So things like depression, anxiety, and that was found to be something that came out of that happening too much. So that was kind of quite interesting to me in terms of the healthy part. And the achieving part was that, you know, with all this kind of upheaval going on at home, and this was kind of backed up by what teachers were saying, was that there's obviously a threat in that, you know, school attendance might drop, there might be less opportunities for the young person to complete work at home, or maybe less parental support in terms of their work. So that was something that teachers, I think, needed to be aware of. And the included part was for them to be aware that the young people, they weren't often included in like the anything to do with cancer as an illness, or their parents' treatment, or that kind of thing. They were kind of, I think, young people in the research that I looked at broadly were not forgotten about, but I think they were parents would try and protect them, so they would not tell them certain things, and that kind of, you know, it was found that it wasn't the most positive thing to do, although it kind of comes from a good place and a sort of wanting to protect them. It was quite difficult, I think, then, and there was obviously that kind of threat to their well-being, and that they didn't know what was going on. So teachers kind of needed, or like teachers, named persons, that kind of thing, they need to be aware of that when they were, you know, if they had a pupil in their caseload whose parent had cancer. I suppose the second challenge that you said, the teacher well-being, that was something else that I found really interesting, because that was more about like what happens when you're a guidance teacher and you've maybe got your own personal experiences with cancer, whether it's with a loved one, whether it's, you know, a parent, as a parent yourself, or, you know, that kind of thing. And what happens when a young person sits in front of you and tells you that their parent is going through this, and the sort of emotional response that you might have, and how that's something that's not really considered very much in school. It's the emotional labour that causes. And that was one of the main focuses that I kind of took, is like the emotional labour and what that is. So that's the sort of how much effort you put into masking your own feelings when, you know, you're faced with a trauma in front of you, or you're kind of speaking to someone about something that is quite emotional. And if there's too much emotional labour, and like day to day you're constantly having to kind of mask your own true feelings, then that could lead to emotional burnout, which obviously isn't a very positive thing for anyone to have, let alone a guidance teacher. So it was, I found from the research there that was quite interesting, was there are some kind of protective factors as a guidance teacher that you've got, and they're sort of natural, they're there without really having to do much. And that's the first one being the sort of call to teach, that and certainly in my experience, and what from reading and from speaking to colleagues, that the people that go in to guidance and pupil support, they do it because they feel like they've got a lot to give. So that's their sort of their call to teach, basically, that they want to be there, and that's a protective factor when it comes to that sort of protecting themselves from that sort of emotional labour. In terms of other things, they've also got there's the ethos in the school that can be quite protective, that there needs to be a good collegiate atmosphere, ethos, like good working together, sort of debriefing with each other within a sort of strong guidance or pupil support team. And so that's, you know, that sort of climate's really important. And what also came out of stuff that teachers had said was that sometimes they've got their own personal protective factors. So something like cancer, for example, there was one respondent who'd said that religion was a protective factor for them. And there was another who was a science teacher as well. And they'd said that the looking at, you know, the way that they see cancer and illnesses is quite a sort of pragmatic way of looking at it. So they kind of took their science background and used that as a protective factor when they were communicating with young people who were going through that. I think what the main thing that came out of that for me that was quite important in taking, you know, things forward from my research was, I think it was like building on that organisational ethos element and making sure that, you know, that any teacher is a human being basically, and if they are having to use emotional labour all the time, or if they're working on particularly challenging, you know, cases or particularly challenging issues with pupils, there needs to be that sort of opportunity for debrief with someone who the teacher feels comfortable speaking with about. And it's not just about whether they've done the right thing or wrong thing or anything like that, it's how it's sort of affecting them. And I know that I like feel quite passionate about that, because there's, you know, there's other professions that work with young people who get that opportunity, and it's built into their, you know, working time, to like that, you know, if it's social work or if it's say like mental health nursing, that kind of thing, they are dealing with maybe similar issues that a guidance teacher is, but they have supervision built in, that they get the opportunity to speak with a supervisor or speak with a line manager about how it is that they're feeling about the cases that they have. And yeah, I think that that's quite an important factor, basically.
It's a great recommendation, Andy, and I'm very fortunate in my own educational context that I do have regular supervision, as we call it, and we actually have health and wellbeing groups with a psychologist, and that's something that's just part of the ethos, part of the kind of every week, every term working within my own particular specialist provision. So I mean, it's great to hear you talking about that. What other recommendations have come out from your research?
I think, well, in terms of one of the biggest ones, like kind of combining my responses that I got from guidance teachers and like looking at the literature, was pretty obvious, to be honest, but it was to continue to kind of put the child at the centre of any work that's going on, and to make sure that the sort of recognising that every pupil is going to, as an individual here, and they're going to have different needs and different ways of coping with their parent being ill, basically. And that's it. It's sort of a wee bit further complicated in that you're not just dealing with the pupil, you're dealing with the family, if you like, as well, and how they're coping and dealing with the disease. So it can be quite complex, and it's something to be taking the family into account is important, but I think it's just allowing the pupil, going at the pupil's pace, like not kind of forcing the issue. If the pupil knows that you're there if they want to chat about it, but equally school was kind of sometimes seen and commented as being the constant when things are pretty hectic at home. You know, a lot of pupils would maybe come to school as an escape. So it's important to kind of go at their pace. And as I said, you know, and the other recommendation being like working on schools' ethos to be able to protect the people who are dealing with these kind of issues. There was also like in terms of the what I talked about in the challenge of Scottish education, if you like, was this was written at a time that Getting the Right for Every Child and the Children and Young People's Act was just kind of beginning to establish itself. So it was just looking at sort of clarifying named person position and everything like that, and making sure that the healthcare professionals who are maybe working with the family during cancer diagnosis and treatment and everything like that, that they recognise that the young people involved, if they're treating someone who's got maybe school-age children, that they attempt to try and involve the named person a little bit, or the you know, the guidance teacher or pupil support teacher, because there might be this sort of emotional reaction from them. So it's important that that's recognised. There was also I was lucky enough that like during my research, there was one of our pupils' parents actually worked in cancer support and oncology, and I was able to kind of get like run my research past her and get some advice and stuff, and she'd suggested a course called Sage and Thyme. So like Sage and Thyme the herb, but it's an acronym like everything is. But it was about sort of dealing with difficult conversations, and it was run by it's a sort of license course type thing, but I'm sure it was Macmillan Cancer Support that sort of ran the courses. So it did have a sort of cancer specific focus. But it was very useful for anything really, but it was useful for having a structure to conversations that you might have with maybe a young person, but definitely with parents about their illness, if you know, that would obviously be a task that you might have to do as someone involved in pupil support during this. So that the sort of looking into what supports are available from local cancer support charities, or you know, your local hospital or that kind of thing, looking at what is available there, was also a kind of recommendation from my research.
Now we're just coming to the end of the show, Andy. You've kind of touched on it earlier on, but can you just kind of capture the impact that the actually carrying out the research has had on your practice?
I think there's two parts to that. I think there's the actual, you know, like context that I've been working in. So I definitely think that through looking at a topic like this in detail, it's meant that I've obviously become quite knowledgeable about it. You know, people, other guidance teachers in school, you know, would, if they had a situation where they had a pupil whose parent was ill, then they would kind of look at me for support or help or that kind of thing. So I think it's allowed me to become quite knowledgeable about it and kind of look at the background to why some behaviours happen and coping and that kind of thing. But I think, like, the process, the research process itself has really interested me and helped me, and like totally frames just a lot of the work that I do now, especially in the position that I'm doing just now. I've definitely seen a big increase in education and things in schools becoming much more evidence-based. So the fact that I've got that kind of background of conducting quite a big piece of research, it kind of makes me feel a bit more confident and comfortable in my own practice and doing, you know, all these different things, it's kind of encouraged me to read a bit more and to try things out and look at what the impacts are and then change them, and whether that's formally and, you know, it's written down and that stuff, or whether it's just informally and it's something that's happening every day. It's really sort of inspired me that way. And I think, to be honest, the biggest thing that I've taken from it is just how brilliant kids are, basically, that they could be have like all this stuff going on at home, and they could be experiencing all sorts of feelings and all sorts of things going on with their parents or people at home, and yet they still manage to come into school and they still manage to go to their classes and achieve and attain. And I think that it's really sort of inspiring, and it's really a good sort of motivator for anyone to keep on trying to improve and support them as best as they can.
And yourself, Andy, you've been more than willing to kind of share your research, haven't you? I mean, you've presented it to a recent scale event.
Yeah. There was the Inquire and collaboration event run by Scale, and it was quite interesting to go to that and to kind of be, you know, aware of what's going on with Scale, because as at the very start of my MEd, I think it was when the Donaldson report and stuff was coming out, and I remember being someone coming in to the school from Scale and showing the very basic website that they were developing, and we had to kind of give feedback. So for it to see that kind of come, and for me to see what they were wanting to do with the event that I went along to for sharing research was really interesting, and I would definitely encourage everyone to look at Scale website and go to their events and see what is going on with it, because it's a great opportunity to not just to share your own practice, but also to obviously pick up stuff from other people.
And you've been very kind, Andy, to put on, allow us at edutalk.cc to put up your dissertation itself and also your research poster, so folk will be able to access the podcast in addition to those two particular resources. So thank you very much for that. And what are you up to now then, Andy? So are you going to be doing some more research, building on what you've done, or is the focus very much back to your sort of your day-to-day aspects of the job?
I definitely hope to do some more, maybe not formal study, although I wouldn't ever kind of shut the door to that. But I definitely, the role that I'm doing now, the seconded post at the sort of authority level, means that I've got lots of opportunities. It is a very strategic role, so I've got a lot of opportunity to be able to use, you know, research approaches and work with schools in gathering data on anything that they're looking at, with obviously a particular focus on health and well-being. So I would be, I'm definitely trying to use the skills that I've learned through doing my master's and doing this dissertation, and trying to kind of carry that on and look at building not just my practice, but look at supporting schools and building their practice there and their teachers' practice, basically.
And of course, the other link that if you're okay, Andy, that we'll add to the podcast page is that you're doing the London Marathon this year, and
I am.
You've got a Just Giving page set up.
Yes, that would be very. I would be delighted if you would share that. And that's, I'm doing it for Maggie Centre. Obviously, a big cancer support charity, and they've been very helpful, not just with my preparation for the London Marathon, but in terms of, like, they've been they've wanted to see my research, and I've been able to get the opportunity to go to the Maggie Centre here in Dundee and discuss it. And you know, they're obviously a very good charity, and I think it just totally exemplifies that what I was saying at the very start about the sort of positives that come out of the illness and the survivorship and the community element. And I was delighted, honest, delighted that I was able to get a charity place to run the London Marathon for them. So I was running earlier today, and I'm just kind of trying to build up my training as best as I can, and also obviously trying to raise as much money as possible for them. So I would be delighted if you would
certainly be sure to contribute as well, and you know, best wishes for that particular event. Andy, it's been great having you on the show, and best wishes with everything that you're doing. And I know that as ever, listeners can get in touch via Twitter, but I know that you're on Twitter yourself, Andy, and it's A Cunningham HWB. If I'm correct.
Yeah, that's right.
So folk can get in touch with you that way also.
Yeah.
So thanks again, Andy. Look forward to getting the podcast up later on this month, and be great to have you on in the future to hear maybe about some of the other aspects of your job, which does sound really interesting.